Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
If you're lost, you can look, and you will find me, time after time. If you fall, I will catch you, I will be waiting, time after time, time after time.
We rarely harmonize, but we did it that time.
Yeah, we nailed it.
That time. All right.
That time after time.
It's time. Mark off the timestamp for those of you that hate it and comment it below because the show is beginning. How's it going, everybody? Oh, hello. You're watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. It's time for part two of our M21 set review. Good thing we split this into two parts because part one ended up being
an hour and a half,
90 minutes.
Oh my lord.
We got through the shrines, we got through the new planeswalkers, and then we did the green and white cards, which means we have blue cards, red cards, black cards, multicolor cards, artifact cards, and land cards to discuss today. So there's plenty to get through, but before we start, don't forget cardkingdom.com/command zone. M21 right on the horizon. Obviously, because we're talking about it. You can pre-order all that stuff right now so that you'll have it the weekend that it all comes out. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of cards in this set. For a core set, there's a lot more stuff for Commander than normal. A lot of stuff you want. Of course, Jumpstart, also right around the corner. Masters coming up. Oof. Ikoria, C20. There's tons of stuff that's come out in the last just like couple of months. So if you're like us, I mean, I'm assuming you're like this, Jimmy. There's still a ton of stuff I haven't got my hands on.
Nope.
So cardkingdom.com/command zone. You're going to buy that stuff anyway. Just use that affiliate link when you do.
Well, one thing I really like to do when I'm on cardkingdom.com/command zone is just scroll through their singles, scroll through what they have. And a lot of times stuff catches me off guard. I'm like, oh, right. We talked about that card. Jeez, it feels like a year ago now. But
yeah, I meant to get it.
Yeah, here we go. I'll buy a copy now. Or they have a foil, whatever it is. And also, cardkingdom.com/command zone has a lot of Ultra Pro products, and Ultra Pro is definitely having a field day because there is so much new stuff, so much great art. All of the sort of showcase frames in those cards that are special in Ikoria, Double Masters, and all that, they're coming with alternate art versions. We look at a wall scroll that's sitting behind us every single day here on the set. So there's tons of really great products, and Ultra Pro is the number one place to get it because it's high quality, it's durable, it's going to last you a long time, and more importantly, it's protecting everything you need, and Josh and I trust it. We've been using it for 5+ years. You can buy a lot of their folios and stuff on cardkingdom.com/command zone, or, you know, if you're just at your local LGS or a big box retailer, they have some stuff there as well. It's just online, so please take our word for it. Ultra Pro is the way to go.
Yeah, they are the best. And also, people that are the best are our patrons. That's the final way to support all of our content. If you go to patreon.com/command zone, you can contribute directly to our stuff, and you get all kinds of perks, like hanging out with Jimmy and I on our Discord each and every day. You also get to see Game Nights, which is coming up very, very soon, a day earlier than the general public.
Yeah.
So we have our M21 episode on the horizon. You're not going to want to miss that. patreon.com/command zone. And we also shout out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to Jaden Holly.
Jaden,
you rock. All right, let's get into this M21 set review part two. So if you haven't listened to part one, you might want to go do that first.
Although I guess they don't have to.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, it doesn't really matter which order you do. Also, we did all the new legendary creatures, all the new commanders in another separate video. So this is like a three-part set review now. So if you're looking for legendary creatures, we're not going to talk about those today. You need to find that video, which is two episodes ago. Okay, let's talk about, well, let's just jump back into the colors here. We did green and white, so blue is up next.
I had an interesting idea for this, Josh.
Okay.
Because blue's your favorite color,
yes,
and red's my favorite color,
yes,
let's see if we can guess how the other person thinks about these cards, and then we'll talk about them normally.
Okay, sure. Okay, sure.
All right, so the first one up is one that's making the headlines. It's Discontinuity. It's 3 blue, blue, blue for an instant, and it says, as long as it's your turn, this spell costs 2 blue, blue less to cast. So it actually reduces the mana cost from 3 blue, blue, blue to 1 and a blue. And the card just says, end the turn. So to specify what that means, exile all spells and abilities from the stack, including this card. The player whose turn it is discards down to their maximum hand size, damage wears off, and this turn and until end of turn effects end. So this is a card.
Yeah, this is a time stop Sundial of the Infinite effect. Okay, well, let's see you predict what I think about this card.
I think Josh really likes this card. This card is really powerful because of the modal ability. There's two ways to cast it. One in the blue on your own turn to end your own turn is an effect that you sometimes want to do. And Josh, or I guess me, put out a video talking about Rune of the
Hidden Realm.
I was going to say of the Fomori, but that's Ruhan. and I think this card works well with those types of effects as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about how with Rune, there's now kind of a loophole in the system where you can exile somebody's commander permanently if they kind of make the wrong choice. This can do that. There's also a ton of just general usage. You're right. I like this card a lot. The fact that you can get this effect so cheaply, because Time Stop is sort of the closest equivalent to this,
yes,
right? And that's 5 mana?
6 mana.
6 mana?
Same
six
cost,
mana.
But it's only 2 blue pips, so it's quote-unquote easier to cast.
Right, it's 3 blue blue, right? Or sorry, 4 blue blue.
Right.
But you know, you often do use this effect on your own turn because you're doing shenanigans with it. Like, I guess for people that don't understand this effect, what you're looking for is cards that say they do something and then at end of turn, they have their downside.
Yeah.
So like
exile it or do whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So like Geist of St. Traft creates an angel and then at end of turn, you sacrifice it or whatever. Until end of turn, that the time stop discontinuity stuff doesn't do anything about. So if you giant growth your thing and then you end the turn, it doesn't stay with +3/+3 forever,
right?
But if you do the Geist of St. Traft thing, you keep the angel forever because that's an at end of turn thing,
right?
So what are some other cards that we like here, Jimmy?
The big thing to me is, like, outside of the end of turn shenanigans, which I love, Sneak Attack is a card that works very well with it.
Sneak Attack is so good with
it. You keep the cards.
So just cast all those things for one mana each.
Discontinuity, it says exile all spells and abilities from the stack. So, Josh, for instance, you played the Uro of Titan of Nature's Wrath, and this is a card that when you cast it, when it enters the battlefield, sacrifice it unless it escaped, which is an alternative cost you pay from your graveyard. However, with that ability on the stack, you can cast Discontinuity, and boom, your Uro sticks around.
Yep. Yeah.
You can even order it, I believe, in a way that the two triggers happen, right? Uro comes in, you draw a card, gain 3 life, put a land on the battlefield. Then you put the other thing on the second, and then in response to that, you hold priority and discontinuity and keep row around.
Yeah, exactly. You saw me doing this with Crystal Shard, like responding to those two triggers. You
right.
could respond to the two triggers and end the turn, keep Uro. You put fetch lands down here. So this,
this is so mean.
This is a mean thing you can do to people, which is they fetch, boom, sack the thing, and then you end the turn in between when the trigger's on the stack. It's like stifling. Rune of the Hidden Realm, we talked about exiling things. You've got Cedrus the Traitor King on here.
Right. Unearth is an ability that says return the creature card to the battlefield. It gains haste and then exile it at the beginning of the next end step, or if it will leave the battlefield. Discontinuity just gets rid of all those triggers and says, nope, that's actually not getting exiled.
Myriad is a good mechanic with end the turn effects because it creates tokens that go away at the end of combat.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you cast all your spells you want to pre-combat main phase, leave enough open for discontinuity, go to attacks. Let's say you have Blade of Selves on something that creates a token copy of that creature attacking each of your opponents. And then depending, you could even do this before blocks if they could block and kill the thing, or you can do it after the damage is done. After the damage is done, trigger goes on the stack to exile those tokens, and you go, end the turn, I'm going to keep those tokens forever.
Right, if it's not like a profitable attack, but you just want two or three more copies of a really good creature.
Yeah, or you get ETB effects on it or whatever. Right. Ooh, also, there are creatures that just natively have Myriad, so you could use this with those. We can't possibly go through... Oh, wait, I want to go through one more. The Final Fortunes of the World, Jimmy?
Oh, yes, that's right. Cards that say if you take an extra turn, then at the end of that turn, you lose the game.
Right.
No,
well, that's an at-the-end-of-turn trigger, the lose-the-game part, and you go, okay, well, I'm going to end the turn before I would lose the game.
Yeah, you're exiling that ability. It's on the stack. You're like, nah, no thanks.
And we should be clear that, yeah, for those effects, you need to wait until the trigger goes on the stack and then end the turn, because otherwise it'll want to put that trigger on the stack sometimes at the beginning of the next end step.
Or
like Rune, you have to wait till that trigger to bring the thing back goes on the stack and then end the turn. Otherwise, it'll bring it back on the, you know, Jimmy's turn.
The next end
step. So anyway, these are really cool effects, and the fact that this only costs two mana on your turn, I think it makes it better than Time Stop.
Certainly.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, the only thing that's holding it back is that there's three blue pips.
But, so it's like one more blue, even in the worst case scenario, and that's not even that bad.
Yeah.
And we're going to find in a second here, well, we'll get to it in about three cards, holding up six mana is not going to be the worst thing for you.
No, in general, I think blue has a pretty darn good time holding up just mana in general. So let's move on to the next one here. You want to read this one?
Okay, this is Ghostly Pilferer. It's one in a blue for a 2/1. Spirit Rogue. When it becomes untapped, you may pay two generic mana. If you do, draw a card. Okay. So it's inspired, right? That's the inspired mechanic?
Oh, yeah, right. When it becomes untapped, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. And then it says, whenever an opponent casts a spell from anywhere other than their hand, draw a card. Hmm. So the Kess decks and the Carador decks of the world, or Muldrotha decks of the world are giving you cards. And then also says you can discard a card, : Ghostly Pilferer can't be blocked this turn. So you can protect it knowing that you're going to get through, they can't block it, and it'll untap hopefully next turn, and you can draw that card to replace the one that you discarded. It costs you two mana to draw the card, so
yeah.
It's not the...
I think you just said what Josh Lucar thinks about this card, which is it's not that amazing. I think it has a lot of utility, maybe in the right decks, but otherwise, unless you're facing a bunch of Muldrothas, you wouldn't be running this typically.
Yeah, if you know your meta, and there's a lot of people casting things out of graveyards often, you got a Muldrotha, deck, you know, a Carador, that kind of stuff that's showing up in your meta often, then this might be worth it, because it's likely to like get in once or twice early, maybe draw you a couple cards if you want to pay that mana, and then maybe draw you a couple cards just incidentally off what people are doing.
Right. It is a free discard outlet, so you could, for instance, discard every card in your hand to trigger this a bunch of times. So there are some decks that want that. I put down Tetsuko Umezawa, who's a card that says creatures you control with power toughness one or less can't be blocked.
Yep.
So this is like a mono blue Staxi type build you might build here, and Ghostly Pilferer just generates you a lot of value. And it, you know, it's not the most efficient draw engine, but it will get the job done.
Yeah, that's the thing I'd say about this overall, is if you're using the top part, which is pay two, draw a card, even if it didn't have, even if it wasn't conditional, and this one is because it has to untap,
right,
it's still like not for blue. If it was white, sure, but for blue, it's
if
like
it was white, we'd
two to draw a card is just like not great. It's not something you want to be doing. This is an interesting one. You put down Knowledge Pool.
Knowledge Pool is a card that, please don't play it, by the way. It makes chaos happen. But with Ghostly Pilferer, very interesting. Six mana artifact with imprint. When Knowledge Pool enters the battlefield, each player exiles the top three cards of their library. And whenever a player casts a spell from their hand, that player exiles it. If that player does, they may cast a spell from among other cards exiled with Knowledge Pool without paying its mana cost. So that's going to draw you cards off Ghostly Pilferer. But in general, this just causes mad mayhem and chaos around the table.
And also, generally, the person who plays Knowledge Pool immediately locks everyone out with Teferi. There's a bunch of cards now that basically say your opponents can't cast spells without paying their mana cost, and just means your opponents can't cast spells now. As combos go, Ghostly Pilferer with Knowledge Pool is one of the nicer ones, right? You're just saying, no, I'm not going to lock you out of the game exactly. I'm just going to draw a lot of cards off of you.
This may be one of the few ways that mono white and red get access to cards in other colors, really, is just casting Knowledge Pool and at six mana, being like, hey, who's got to cultivate off the top of their deck? I want it.
I was going to say vehicles. If you have a deck that's touching blue and has a bunch of vehicles, that would be a way to get Ghostly Pilferer tapped without attacking with it, that you could untap and pay two and draw two.
Yeah.
Still not that great. But again, I think you only play it if they're casting a bunch of spells out of their graveyard in your meta, or they're casting a bunch of spells and not from their hands.
Yeah.
And then you just also want to incidentally have this other stuff. Like you still wouldn't even play it unless maybe I have a couple vehicles in this deck too. And then I have, you know.
Or you're a reanimator deck. You're playing Lazav the Multifarious. You want cards in your graveyard to be copied. Yada, yada.
Yep.
Yep. Very, very, a bit more niche, but also at the same time, I think this is like, by the way, just a good power level for a blue card to have. Yeah. Nothing's busted about it. It addresses some problems in certain metas and has a valuable effect.
And it gets out there early and can attack their Teferi if they play it, which is a thing, right? Yeah.
How good are you at killing Teferi? Yeah. Ah, actually, pretty good. Good job, Ghostly Pilfer. Actually, no one's really that good at killing Teferi.
He still takes a couple of hits, but at least, you know, you start to help out.
Unless he gets phased out of existence.
But then that basically did 3 damage to Teferi rather than 2, right?
Okay, so. All right. Good job, Ghostly Pilfer. You pilfered them. 1 damage. Okay, next up is See the Truth, 1 in the blue for a sorcery. Look at the top 3 cards of your library. Put one of those cards into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. If this spell was cast from anywhere other than your hand, put each of those cards into your hand instead. So this could be a 2 mana draw 3 at sorcery speed compared to Ghostly Pilfer, untap, pay 2, draw 1. Clearly an upgrade. However, a lot of other times this is just a sorcery speed anticipate.
Right. What do you think I think about it?
I think Josh thinks this card is actually pretty good. You just got to have the kind of deck that really empowers it to only, like, you don't want to play this for 2 mana, draw 1, look at 3 cards.
No, you need the ability to cast it from your graveyard, basically. I mean, it says from not your hand.
Graveyard, from exile.
Yeah, but the most likely place you're going to cast it from that's not your hand is the graveyard. Yeah. So, but I don't think you need a lot, right? If you just have a Snapcaster Maze, or Mage, and a Past in Flames in your deck.
Underworld Breach, everyone's favorite new red enchantment.
Yeah, I mean, if you have all 3 of those, Underworld Breach is so good with this, actually, because you can cast it over and over again.
Oh my gosh, you're right. It just goes...
right? Because remember, Underworld Breach doesn't exile the card after you cast it, so it goes back to your graveyard, which you cast it again out of your graveyard by just exiling the cards. And so if your graveyard's big enough, this just pay 2, draw 3, pay 2, draw 3. If you even do that like twice, that's 6 cards for 4 mana. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
So that's really good with Underworld Breach, but I don't think you need 50 of those effects. Well, obviously you wouldn't have that many, but you don't need 5 of those effects. You just need 2, you know, Yawgmoth's Will, or if you just have a couple, I think that's good enough value because this card is very low impact on your deck.
You might have a replaceable effect already in there that this is similar to.
Like pay 2, pick the best card out of your top 3. It didn't hurt you much, even if you didn't never draw your Underworld Breach that game.
Mm-hmm.
And then the games where you do draw the Underworld Breach, it becomes insane.
Right.
So I don't think you need a ton of synergy with it before it's like playable.
Yeah, my Paco and Haldan deck could definitely play this because you can find ways to put this on top of your library. And when you exile it, when Paco attacks, then boom, you can cast it from not your hand. Pretty interesting.
You put on a card here we haven't talked about much, but Collected Conjuring.
Yeah, this
I was like, I had to look it up. I didn't remember what it did.
Right, because there is Collected Company, which is all about creatures. This is the sorcery 2 blue and a red version to exile the top 6 cards of your library. You may cast up to 2 sorcery spells. Sorcery, what? With converted mana cost 3 or less from among them without paying their mana cost. And then you put the exiled cards not cast this way on the bottom of your library in a random order. So this is like Collected Company, but way worse. And at sorcery speed, and can only hit sorceries. But it does hit See the Truth. So
and it casts it from not your hand.
Yeah, so if you were looking to finally make Collected Conjuring work, congrats, you're a teeny bit close.
See, the way I would put that is if Collected Conjuring is already in your deck, then that deck is a candidate that might want See the Truth.
Ah, good point.
Yeah. This is a card we haven't talked about in years.
I know. Helava or Jaleva, Nephelia's Scourge. When it enters the battlefield, each player exiles the top X cards of their library, where X is the amount of mana to cast Jaleva.
We call her Helava, but it's been so long that we're not certain or confident that you will know that. So
yeah,
it's
and actually created the nickname too on this show, which is another card we're going to be mentioning here in a second. And then whenever Helava attacks, you can cast an instant or sorcery from among those cards exile without paying its mana cost. So it's sort of like Turbo Mill yourself. This creature is a 4-mana 1/3 flyer.
Generally in that deck, you want to be casting huge things though, not little.
You're not paying its mana cost. Yeah, exactly.
Cast. So the person who came up with the nickname for Haleva is Alex Kessler. So the next card we're going to talk about is Kess, Dissonant Mage, which Watsy was kind enough to give to Alex Kessler as a preview card.
It wasn't
so
named after him, but they were like, hey, you know,
it's close enough.
Why not? Yeah.
So Kess, Dissonant Mage allows you to cast instants and sorceries out of your graveyard 1 per turn. So See the Truth, boom, becomes 2 mana, draw 3. Pretty sweet.
Yeah, pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think this card is like low key pretty good.
Yeah, it just works on both ends of it. You know, if you're doing the whole like test of like, is it good this way, that way? It's like actually not bad this way and really good the other way.
I mean, at its worst, it's just not very bad. Pay yeah. two, get some card selection. That's like almost a cantrip. Like it's not great. But then the fact that the upside is so big later on in the game, you're just like,
right.
Pay two, draw three. Jeez.
And it certainly is great until you compare it to this next card.
Okay, so this next card is, yeah.
Front runner.
Oh, wait, no, you've got to guess how if I like it or not, so here we go.
I don't think this is a tough one. The test...
this is going to really tax your brain.
Give me a gimme on this one.
All right. It's Sublime Epiphany. Some funky art on this thing. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Days a little bit. The
oh, yeah.
It's 4 blue for an instant. It says, choose one or more.
Hmm.
So you can choose only one, or you can choose all of them, or you can choose three of these.
Wait, there's more than three?
So there's, what did we say? There's 31 different combinations.
31.
Because there's 5 different modes on this card. And okay, again, you can choose one or more. No not problem. Just one or two or... Okay, so
it's a sorcery, right?
It's an instant. 4 blue. So here's the 5 modes. Counter target spell. Or counter target activated or triggered ability. Or return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand.
Oh boy.
Or... create a token that's a copy of target creature you control. Or target player draws a card.
So you're always drawing a card, right? 6 mana, instant, draw one card.
Worst case scenario. The worst thing this ever does, if the board's like completely empty, is counter a spell and you draw a card, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, everyone's favorite 1 blue cryptic command.
Right. Which is harder to cast, but a little less mana, but, you know, close enough. But it also... could bounce a non-land permanent. It also could make a copy
right.
of one of your creatures.
Cryptic Command cannot do more than 2.
It also could just counter a Planeswalker Ultimate, you know, a triggered ability. It could counter a fetch land, like, you know, the mean thing we were talking about, or ruin returning a creature.
Right.
But not just do that, but also draw you a card, count, you know, bounce something, mm-hmm. make a token of something. The fact that the... Oh, wait. No, you're supposed to guess if I like this card. Sorry.
Josh. Hi, I'm Josh. This card is clearly underpowered. Wizards needs to do a lot more to really bring blue up to speed, and certainly creating a single spell that's better than every single red card printed, except for maybe Underworld Breach in the past 2 years. Nah, no prob. This card's nuts.
Yeah, this is my other candidate besides Teferi for best card in the set.
You know, we always talk about how a 9-mana Expropriate can win the game. Do you think a 6-mana Sublime Epiphany has the ability to do that as well, just given how much it can do?
Yeah, I think so for sure, because if you're talking counter a spell, bounce a key permanent, make a copy of your best thing, that right there is total game altering.
Yeah.
Right?
Because it's a 3-for-1.
And it's not the same people. So I counter your spell, bounce the thing from one of my other opponents, double my best thing, and all of a sudden, think of the balance shift that just occurred. Stop you. If the third person was in fourth place in the game, you were, you know, in second or first, you just vaulted so far ahead, and it's very powerful. Not to mention there are combo-tastic things you can do with this to just really make it go off. Yeah, this is...
Yeah.
Listen, Mystic Confluence and Cryptic Command... very powerful cards. If you're in heavy blue decks, you can run those in all those decks. Like, the only reason you don't run them is because you're a nice person.
Yeah, you don't want to counter something.
But like, objectively, just putting them in your deck is almost always correct.
Yeah.
And then they just made a quote-unquote better version of them. I think, you know, it's 6 mana, so CEDH and things may not want to run this because it just costs so much. But for casual, this is a powerhouse card. It's just such a blowout.
And we hold up 6 mana very often in this format. Yep. And, you know, thinking back to See the Truth, it's 2 mana for a spell that's kind of like Ponder, right, at its worst, but that's only 1 mana. Going from 1 to 2, not a big deal. Going from like 4 to 6, 2 in EDH, it's not a huge jump. It's not as big as you might think it is. It's definitely not going from like 4 to 7.
Yeah, 7 was our threshold for the stats episode for a reason, because that's the point we saw where it really started to make a difference. There's a big difference between 6 and 7.
Yeah.
Once you get to 7, that's kind of the high CMC stuff. If this was 7, I would feel a little differently about it. But 6...
I still feel good at 7, though, right?
Yeah. But 6 is just below the threshold where I think you can find spots to hold this mana open and cast this most games. And if you hold the mana open for this, the downside of counterspells is nobody plays anything that you want to counter, and then you kind of are like, oh, I didn't want to cast this, and I just wasted the mana. I didn't use it for this turn.
Right.
Worst case scenario on this is bounce something, make a copy of your best thing, draw a card. For 6 mana... that's still pretty good.
Yeah. And like, you know, you have to be a little careful. Don't target it on things that can get fizzled. So someone could, like, you know, return their own creature with a crystal shard or sack it to something, you know. So you just have to be a little careful of that. But still, even at its worst, this just has so much, right? You're already in a blue deck. You're going to have, if you don't cast Sublime Epiphany, maybe it's two other things from your hand that draw you a card, do something else. Maybe
you've got other options.
Yeah, you have other options. Sublime Epiphany just feels like one of those cards that we'll have to just be very aware of and play around for the duration of the format. Because six mana also, like, you have access to a Torrential Gearhulk.
It's so good with Torrential Gearhulk.
Because it enters the battlefield. You can cast an instant or sorcery without or an instant without paying its mana cost.
From your graveyard.
From your graveyard. So Torrential Gearhulk's down. You cast Sublime Epiphany. All the effects go off. You create a copy of the creature you control. Is Sublime Epiphany, is it off the, is it in the graveyard yet? The original Sublime Epiphany?
Yeah.
Well, why not do it again?
Yeah, because I just made a copy of it. So bounce two things.
Pretty sure that's how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll exile it the second time, right?
Right.
Because, yeah, but still. Remember, you do have to copy modes when you copy things, but not when you recast it without paying its mana cost.
Right.
This is going to come up in a minute because we're going to talk about copying it. Because another really good combo with this is Dual Caster Mage.
Yes. Dual Caster Mage is a 1 red, 2/2 flash. When it enters the battlefield, copy targeted instant or sorcery spell. You may choose new targets for the copy.
So you have to choose the same modes, but you can choose different targets. This immediately goes infinite. Because you Sublime Epiphany, and with Sublime Epiphany on the stack, now you do have to have
something to target.
A token or a creature on the battlefield that you can target. But you go, okay, target, you know, this, target that with the bounce, target, you know, me to draw a card.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you're not even countering something. And then you hold priority and you flash in Dual Caster Mage, copying the Sublime Epiphany. And that Sublime Epiphany, the second one, targets the Dual Caster Mage.
Right, because it needs to enter the battlefield for it to trigger.
Yep, exactly. So and now when that token comes in, it copies the original Sublime Epiphany, which copies the Dual Caster Mage, and you keep the mode. So you're bouncing non-land permanents and drawing cards this whole time. Exactly.
You can also target the same thing multiple times, right? So you don't need to worry about running out of targets.
Yeah, because it's all going to resolve.
Yeah.
And then you can even mill people out this way, right? Because you could target them to draw the cards or whatever. Like, once you've got the infinite loopy thing going, right? You don't even need non-land permanents to bounce. You can just be like, I'm just going to do...
Right, you can just do token and draw a card. Yeah, so you don't need to worry about unbouncing everything and then fizzling the other copies. Wow.
Yeah, so...
Okay, then. 9 mana win the game.
Yeah. Lutri would have worked with this too, but is banned. Naru Meha is another blue card that does the same thing as Dual Caster Mage in this
instance.
Costs
a little more.
Yeah, and can only target your own stuff.
But mono blue, if you're playing that deck, boom, you have an instant win now with just, you have a 2-card combo instant win in your deck.
Now, that's a lot of mana. It's 10 or 9 mana, and we already know that, like, oh, sure, Expropriate just all by itself will win you the game in that situation too by just casting the one card. But it's still, like, the fact that this card is so good, but also has synergistic combo-y stuff that can go on, but also, like, you don't care. I think if you just cast Sublime Epiphany, you're always going to be happy.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you also combo it with stuff and you get even more happy. It also bounces permanents, and it can be permanents you control, so you could do it with, like, Eternal Witness to get itself back, right? Make the copy of the Eternal Witness, get it back out of your graveyard, hold it open, whatever, like...
There's just a lot of stuff that happens here. Archaeomancer is already a card that I think people should play a little more of, especially now that we have all these Reality Everwise decks running around. So many wheel decks. Things are going to be in your graveyard. You're going to want to find ways to get it out. And now you have Sublime Epiphany to just make things even stronger.
You can either bounce the Archaeomancer back to your hand or create a token copy of it, get the Epiphany back right then.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff you can do. Mnemonic Wall will work with it too. There's going to be a card, I think, Sublime Epiphany, that once it's in the blue player's hand in the game, they're going to be able to recast it multiple times in that game. And it's going to be a real slog just being like, crap, they always have that in their hand and they always have the mana up and this is just a pain in the butt.
How many times do we have to beat this card to win the game type thing? Yeah.
So very strong card.
Good job.
This next card's pretty strong too. Let's be real.
I know, right? Jeez Louise.
I mean, Jimmy, what do I think about this card? It's Teferi, Ageless Insight. 2 blue-blue for a legendary enchantment. If you would draw a card, except the first one you draw on each of your draw steps, draw 2 cards instead.
All right. Would you pay an extra mana for this, Josh? Would you pay 5 mana to play this card?
I've paid 5 mana for this card many times. It's called Alhambra's Archive.
I didn't even know this has a life gain clause on it. I just thought Alhambra's Archive is the same effect.
Yeah.
This is obviously very good. It's in mono blue now. So, I mean, like, typically you're going to be playing blue in the deck that would want the Alhammer's Archive type effect. So it's just great. It's a redundant effect. If you have both this and the Alhammer's Archive out, you're drawing lots of cards.
I mean, we've all seen the person wheel with Alhammer's, right? Like, yes. That's happened to everybody now at this point, and it's devastating.
Yeah.
So the fact that the blue players, who also are the wheel players, have another Alhammer's Archive in their deck that's even cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah, here we go. And yep. There's a lot of wheel decks now because they're wheelie, wheelie good.
Wheelie good. Like, thanks. Real the Everwise.
Thanks, Millie,
again.
For that, by the way.
Yeah.
That, I'm just using it forever now.
I was thinking, it's wheelie, wheelie good. And I was thinking Looney Tunes and all that stuff. The Gavi Nestwarden deck loves this as well. Instead of having to pay 5 for it, now every time you cycle, you're drawing another card.
Pretty sweet.
Jeez Louise. Pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot to say. The Riel, the Everwise we keep talking about.
Yeah, let's just read her since we did not read her this episode yet. Sure. Yeah, 0/3, 1 blue and a red. Riel gets +1/+0 for each instant and sorcery card in the graveyard. Whenever you discard one or more cards for the first time each turn, draw that many cards. So just double it up.
Yeah, so you wheel, you draw 14, but you discarded 7, so then you draw another 14. So a one wheel draws you 28 cards.
28 cards?
Like, insanity, yeah. So, yeah, Braylon, Shabraz, Arjun, the Locust God.
Yeah, the New Teferi.
New Teferi is really good at this because you loot on everybody's turn.
Oh my gosh, you draw two. Discard one. That's pretty good.
Because New Teferi needed some help. All right, so how do we think that blue fair? Don't forget, we've got
Teferi.
Baron, the Sanctum, and Teferi.
So,
Teferi all by himself.
Teferi almost actually pushes, I think, like blue, just to an A, yeah.
And then you got Sublime Epiphany, Teferi is just inside. See the truth is no joke.
Discontinuity.
Ghostly Pilferer is like, whatever, but yeah, it's an A to an A.
Plus.
Yeah, it's an A.
It's hard
to imagine a color having more powerhouse cards come out in a set than this.
Outside of Baron and Ghostly Pilferer and maybe See the Truth, every single one of these cards is looking to be a staple.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to see Discontinuity, Sublime Epiphany, Teferi's Aegis Insight, and Teferi a lot.
And then the Honden Shrine.
Sure,
thing,
yeah,
right?
The Sanctum. Yeah.
Sanctum, okay.
Yeah.
Good job, Blue.
Yeah.
You know how we feel about this. That's for sure.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to your favorite color. Now, one thing I will say is that if you're looking at the video right now,
you can
see the number of red cards in front of us is very high. There's a lot of red cards to talk about, which is not generally the case. I would say red and white are generally like the
lowest.
Yeah, we'll usually talk about 6 or 7 from every color, but one will have 5, maybe one will have 4, and those are usually red and white. How many red cards we got?
10 red cards. That's as many. We are starting from this point on. We're going to talk about 20 more cards.
Half of them are red.
Half of them are red.
So that's a good sign. That's a good sign.
I like that.
And red has some cool stuff going on in this set.
Yeah, this first card, actually, you should read it because I think this is a card that Josh Lee Kwai likes more than Jimmy Wong.
All right, it's Brash Taunter. 4 and a red for a 1/1 goblin with indestructible. Whenever it is dealt damage, it deals that much damage to target opponents. And then you pay 2 and a red and it fights another target creature. 2 and a red and tap it. So you can fight a big creature. It'll deal, you know what, it's an 8/8,
yeah.
Deals 8 damage to Brash Taunter, and then you go boom, you take 8 target opponent.
Oof, jeez.
It's a
stuffy doll.
Yeah, but better, right?
Yeah, because the fight ability here is actually really relevant. Stuffy Doll is a 5 mana artifact that is also indestructible, has a similar text, but it can just tap to ping itself for one,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So Brash Taunter here, it's indestructible. It is just sitting there taunting the biggest thing on the planet.
It basically says nobody can really attack me on the ground, right? Because they're just going to take that damage.
Right.
Unless they have trample or something. And then it also, it can kill stuff if you could pump it in some way or something has one toughness, because it does fight the thing.
But even if it just hold up 3 mana tap every turn cycle, someone's going to take 6.
Yeah.
Someone's going to take 8.
Yeah, they got an Elder Gargaroth out.
Yeah.
It's just like 6 damage, boom, 3 mana, 6 damage to you. You're in red, so you're going to have some other ways to increase that damage.
Right. And that's obviously what this card is very good with. Cards like True Fire Captain and Boros. This is a similar type deck, which is the stop hitting yourself type deck, Josh, mm-hmm. that you always wanted to make. Maybe it's more of a reality now.
Maybe.
Whenever True Fire Captain is dealt damage, it deals that much damage to target player. So you've got this sort of effect in now, like, ooh, how can we throw damage around other ways?
Mm-hmm.
Gideon Sacrifice is a white instant that does something similarly, where it's like all damage that will be dealt to you or a permanent you control. Permanence you control is now dealt to a chosen permanent instead. So there's like a lot of interesting things to do here with this card. Obviously, Torbran and all those cards are
Torbran,
just where you want to be.
Because every time it takes one, somebody takes 3. Also, actually, yeah. It's brutal. There's cards, we didn't write them down, but there's like Pariah.
Oh, right.
That is the same thing. When you take damage, it deals that much. The creature takes the damage instead, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's just going to constantly, any damage you take, funnel it into Brash Taunter, which you funnel out to other things.
Right, right.
Oh, repercussion.
This card, by the way, it just keeps getting better and better. And it seems like Wizards is just going full on into the, let's do damage.
Yeah.
Let's just hurt people. Clothis is actually really good here, because at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, you exile a target card from a graveyard. If it's a land card, you add red or green. Otherwise, you gain 2 life. It deals 2 damage to each opponent. So you're just creating the deck that's just like Brash Taunter can fight the Clothis and then do a bunch of damage to everyone. Everyone's just taking tons of damage.
Oh, that's true. You could fight your own things. I didn't even think about that. So if you were like in a Xenagos deck or something, double its power, attack with it, and then fight it with the Brash Taunter and throw that damage also. I didn't even think that about fighting your own stuff. So you can put big creatures in to guarantee you always have big stuff.
Yeah.
It's also good with, like, Blasphemous Act.
Doing 13 damage to each creature on the battlefield?
Yeah, so boom.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Kills everything a Brash Taunter stays alive. Someone takes an additional 13 on top of that. We'll be talking about this card later, but Fiery Emancipation or any damage doubler here is going to do a ton.
Damage tripler
in this case.
Oh, my Lord.
Star of Extinction, a board wipe that just kills everyone with a ton of damage.
Oh, that's actually just someone's like Blasphemous Act, kind of. Yeah,
someone's taking tons of damage here, so...
Yeah, I like this card quite a bit. Originally, I was like, it's a 5-mana 1/1. But the fact that it's such a good blocker, I think actually, and then it also has additional utility of being able to like get the damage going itself. Maybe this, I wonder if this goes in my Tim deck.
Because
it does have a tap ability.
It's a tap ability, and this is the kind of one that sometimes you just threaten lethal someone.
Yeah.
Someone gets down to 10, someone's like, go to combat, my creature's here, I have a Paco that is now a 12-12. You're like,
I could just kill you with it.
Just need to get taunted, because...
they're flipping the cards off everybody's deck and hoping they get only creatures because they can't afford for it to get bigger.
Yeah. So what do you think Jimmy thinks about this card?
I think Jimmy likes it a lot.
But not as much as Josh.
Yeah.
Because this is just not
definitely
the
more of a shenanigans game. Card.
Yeah. that word's been taken from us. All right, next up, Chandra's Incinerator. This art's kind of funny. It looks like something that was drawn like 15 years ago.
I actually, like, it's when you look at it, then you look at it again, you're like, oh, that's what it is. It's one of those.
Yeah, I like this a lot, though. I like the throwback arts or styles. 5 and a red for a 6/6 creature elemental. This spell costs X less to cast, where X is the total amount of non-combat damage dealt to your opponents this turn. So with Brash Taunter, this could just cost red very easily. Mm-hmm. It's got trample, and whenever a source you control deals non-combat damage to an opponent, Chandra's Incinerator deals that much damage to target creature or planeswalker that player controls. So anytime any source of yours deals non-combat damage to an opponent, so again, Brash Taunter would work, burn spells, any of those Blasphemous Act type spells we said, and then this card does that much damage to a creature or planeswalker. So it's just sort of like kind of damage doubling it, I feel like.
Yeah, it can't throw the damage back at players. It only turns player damage into like removal, right, for creatures and planeswalkers. But you're right, it has a lot of usages because anything that's non-combat becomes... or anything that's non-combat at players becomes like, you know, removal, which can be really, really good. It's, you know, even like Nekusar or something, right? Because that's non-combat damage and you just, I'm going to kill these little things the board. I'm going to kill these Oracle of Moldiah's and these Timnas and crap.
Yeah, draw one card. Okay, ping that thing for one.
Yeah.
Draw another card this turn. That thing's going to die now.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of incidental ways. Mm-hmm. And then obviously you can do bigger things that are going to make it do more damage. This is the card with Repercussion that's crazy, right?
Yes, because now, Repercussion, whenever a creature is dealt damage, Repercussion deals that much damage to that creature's controller. So anytime a creature is dealt damage in combat now, and it's going to deal non-combat damage through Repercussion to their controller, and then Chandra's Incinerator is going to trigger and deal even more damage to another creature, or just basically start pinging things off the planet.
Yeah, that's it. It's not infinite, but it's going to basically kill everything, right? Because you deal...
Oh, right. You're right.
You attack with something if they block. I guess they don't even have to block. If you just like pinged... Because it's Repercussion... doesn't care about combat damage, right?
Right.
If a creature is dealt damage, Repercussion deals that much damage to that creature's controller. So Repercussion's dealing damage. So let's say you just had a Tim for one damage. Tim their creature. Repercussion says, boom, hit the controller. Chandra's Incinerator says, that's non-combat damage to a player. I'm going to hit a creature. You hit the creature, and that
Repercussion.
Says, Repercussion, hit the player. The player, Chandra's Incinerator, oh, that's non-combat damage. I'm going to hit the creature. Oh, I'm going to hit the player.
Yeah.
And then you just do that and kill every creature and probably kill most of the players on the board, depending on how many creatures are out.
Yeah, you can do a lot of damage with this, obviously, when the creature dies. But hey, look, if they have an indestructible creature, stack all the damage on that thing, and then that's an infinite damage loop to someone right there.
This is also, we talked about, I think we noticed as we were talking about the last card.
Yeah.
Clothis is another, this is where Clothis should be mentioned, not Protobraft's Taunter. Because it does the damage to the player.
Right, it's just non-combat damage, and then it's going to trigger a Chandra's Incinerator.
Yep.
And so you can just kind of go back and forth. And even Clothis playing this on turn three, turn four, this now costs two less because Chandra's Incinerator. Actually, no, it costs up to six less if you have three opponents because it's the amount of combat, non-combat damage dealt to a target, your opponents this turn.
Oh, to your opponents this turn. Yeah. So it'll only deal two. Oh, this is weird wording.
Because Clothis is going to deal two to, let's say, three different players.
So that's six damage.
Six damage.
Incinerator costs red.
Right.
But then when it deals the two damage when it's out, it says whenever a source you control deals non-combat damage to an opponent.
Right.
So when it deals two then, that's just two damage all at once. So it'll throw two damage at a creature, not six damage at that point.
But this makes this insanely easy to cast the turn after you play Clothis.
That's cool.
Yeah. Actually, beginning of your pre-combat main phase. Yeah. So you have to cast it and get back to your upkeep into your first pre-combat main phase.
But it doesn't matter. Like, Chandra's Incinerator doesn't care when the damage happened as long as it's this turn, right?
Yep. This goes, I think, automatically into a Purphoros deck. Mm. It's, right, anytime a creature comes in, it's going to do two damage to each opponent, right? Creature, again, Chandra's Incinerator costs red because it's six damage has been done to your opponents. And then from there on out...
And then when you play this, it'll trigger Purphoros dealing non-combat damage, so then it'll shock something right then.
Right then and there, yeah, as you cast it.
And you cast it for red. Oh, it's really good in Purphoros.
Yeah. As if Purphoros needed more friends. A shout out to our game nights... Rurik Thar the Unbowed here.
Oh, yeah, Matthew.
Whenever a player casts a non-creature spell, Rurik Thar deals six damage to that player.
Smash! Smash!
Smash! Artifact! Bitch!
And again, that's just one non-creature spell. Chandra's Incinerator now costs red.
And now anytime they cast a non-creature spell,
they're taking...
They not only take six, but then you kill a creature, basically, because that's six damage to a creature or planeswalker. Yeah, that's going to kill almost everything.
Yeah, so... I like this. Red's going nuts with damage here. Count me in.
Pyrohemia, Pestilence, really, really good with this because it is a 6-6. It will survive, and that's non-combat damage that you then basically throw
just
at
throw, creatures. Keep throwing at things. You're going to do a basically damage-based board wipes is now Red's bread and butter here.
Rakdos, Lord of Riots, cares about non-combat damage, so I can see it going in that deck. Right. Obosh.
Yes, another Obosh.
Deck we talked about recently. I can see it going in that deck. It's an even CMC card, but...
The effect is
exactly
significant. Yeah,
that deck, like Zozu, the Punisher and stuff. Every time they play a land, you deal two damage to one of their creatures. You know that means no small creatures can stick around, right?
Honestly, I think if you're running this in any of these decks we talked about, it's never going to cost six. This is going to cost two or three at the most times. So,
which is great because it has a really relevant ability, and it's a 6/6.
6/6 Trampler.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
Jimmy Wong likes
this card a lot too.
Oh yeah. How do I think Jimmy likes this card? I think he loves it.
Yeah, I definitely love this one.
Okay.
Next up, we have the Conspicuous Snoop. Goblin fans.
A lot of people talk about this one.
Yes, there's a lot to do here.
It's red for a 2/2 Goblin Rogue. It says, play with the top card of your library revealed. You may cast Goblin spells from the top of your library. And as long as the top card of your library is a Goblin card, Conspicuous Snoop has all activated abilities of that card. So this harkens to a lot of different cards over the years. But this... card advantage from the top of your library for goblins thing is kind of new.
It's very new. This would be an automatic include pretty much in any goblin deck.
Yep.
Kiki Jiki, right? So this has the activated abilities of that card. If Kiki Jiki is on the top of your deck, Conspicuous Snoop becomes a copy of that card. Now, the card that people are most talking about with this would just be the Goblin Recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a one or red goblin. When it enters the battlefield, search your library for any number of goblin cards and reveal those cards, shuffle your library, and then put them on top of it in any order. So there's a few things you can do here. Because you're copying the activated abilities, there's a lot you can do. If you have a Skirk Prospector, for instance, this is a card that lets you sacrifice a goblin to add red. If you have then a Torch Courier, which is a card that allows you to sacrifice it, and then another target creature gains haste until end of turn. And then you can have a Kiki Jiki on top with a Goblin Sharpshooter. And then all of a sudden, you're giving all of these cards a lot of haste. You're casting from the top of your library because you're continually making copies of it because you now have a Kiki Jiki combo. You can sack them for mana. You can do basically anything you want. You can cast like every card, every goblin in your deck from that point out with a few of these, with the combo like this.
Yeah, it's super combo-tastic. It's really good. Obviously, it's a goblin-only card, right? Like, this card doesn't do a lot if you're not in a goblin deck, because only the first line of text, which is show the top card of your library to everybody, like, if you don't have any other goblins, the rest of the text doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in every deck with what, how to have 25 plus goblins?
Yeah, if you're a goblin deck, you're going to be running all the goblins, Krenko and all those guys. Goblin Recruiter is the big combo piece here because you get to stack it, and then boom, you get to sort of play the cards off the top of your library, use all the activate abilities because of the snoop. Pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, very cool. I think Jimmy likes it.
Yeah, one of my first commander decks was...
We're not very good at
Kiki-jiki.
This game where we guess what the other person likes because the other person keeps going, I love this card, and then before we guess the guess.
It does say a lot that all of the cards so far were like, hey.
This is cool.
This is cool, okay. Yeah. Thank you for doing this to Red. We appreciate it.
All right, the next one is a type of effect we've been seeing a lot more recently. It's called Double Vision, 3 red-red for an enchantment. Whenever you cast your first instant or sorcery spell each turn, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy.
I'm gonna
guess Jimmy likes it but doesn't love it. This isn't necessarily your type of deal.
I think it's a tiny bit overcosted, but at the same time, this is an enchantment that is going to stick around for a while. Typically, I'm not playing these types of effects that much, right? I'm the type of player that if I run dual caster mage in my deck, it's so I can counter your counter.
Right. It's not so I can like combo off with my Sublime Epiphany.
Yeah, I'd rather win in a silly way, you know, than just, okay, hey, I did 1,000 damage to everyone. Does
everyone
stack
live? Interactions get really complicated with cards like this because forking forks is usually what, you know, it's forking awesome when you do it, but at the same time it can be forking confusing.
Yes, very much so.
We talked about this a lot when we talked about Kalamax and that deck, so I don't know if we want to like retread all that ground, but I think anybody who's watched our show for a bit knows that
we just brush over it fast here.
Yeah, that forks anything that's going to automatically fork stuff. Usually when you add a fork to that mix, you add something that copies to it. Now the thing that's copying things gets copied and it targets the original thing that was copying things and makes another copy, and this is a way to just really quickly create infinite copies of the copy effect.
Yeah,
and then now all you need is a way to weaponize that, and there's things like Kalamax, there's Ral Storm Conduit, there's a whole bunch of ways now to basically say, oh, if you can create infinite copies of a thing, you can win the game off that. And Double Vision is just another way to sort of get that going, I guess.
Yep. So some of the heavy hitters in this category, Kalamax the Storm Sire, Lightning Butt, Raoul the Storm Conduit, Fury Storm, cast Distant Mage, Vile Smasher the Fierce here. Interesting. You could really just get a bunch of big spells, right?
That's less forking your own thing and more just like
Feather players are really excited about this.
Yeah, Feather, because every thing you cast, you get two of it.
And you cantrip twice, you get the card back.
I don't think it's actually that good in Feather, though, because you don't want to pay 5 mana.
True, at that point.
Generally, you're like, you want to kill somebody with, once you get to like Feathers out, you have 6 mana.
Yeah. In general, though, this seems like a decent card here, and I appreciate what it's doing.
I mean, here's the thing. If somebody casts Double Vision and passes the turn, you got to kill them or kill Double Vision. They'll win on their next turn.
Yeah.
Almost every time.
They have the ability to. It's like casting Kiki-Jiki and being like, past turns, like, well, should we let Kiki survive?
Yeah, it'll probably be fine, right? No, it won't be fine. You're going to die. Yeah.
That card says win the game on it, pretty much.
Yeah.
In 1,000 different ways, too. You can't even predict what's about to happen.
It is basically Kiki, but for spells, right? It's copying, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Double vision. Yeah. Your eyes aren't playing tricks on you. I am. No Kiki on the card, though. Can't see him there, unfortunately. Yeah. Okay. This next one, creating quite a bit of buzz.
I like this one. Jimmy likes this one.
Are you kidding me? This card.
Jimmy loves this one.
This card is not just great, it's hilarious. Because green gets cards that are like triple your mana.
Yeah.
Red gets Fiery Emancipation. 3 red-red-red for an enchantment. If a source you control would deal damage to a permanent or player, it deals triple that damage to that permanent or player instead.
We're in the age of tripling.
Yeah, right?
And this is, because we had Nyx Blue Mainchain and whatever, and this is the damage tripler, and boy, it's going to do a lot of damage.
Yes, this thing is going to just... And 6 mana, right? Like, Furnace of Wrath is 4 mana. Dictate of the Twin Gods is 5 mana. For one extra mana, you can get triple the damage.
And I think unlike Nyx Bloom Ancient and some other things, it's harder to take advantage of, like, Nyx Bloom Ancient the turn you play it.
Yeah.
Fiery Emancipation, if you just have some creatures out...
Swing.
You cast it and swing. So you can get the advantage of it, like, right then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you got a one creature that's decent size with trample, is going to become lethal immediately with this thing.
It's funny, Maelstrom Wanderer, because it cascades, if you cast Fiery Emancipation off Maelstrom Wanderer, who is a 7/5, that's an instant kill with your commander, because it's 7 times Done. 3, if they all have blockers or whatever.
Yeah, this is, you know how Craterhoof is probably the last thing a lot of commander players see, you know?
right.
This will be the last thing a lot of commander players see.
Yeah. Ah,
you
I
play
like
it,
that.
And that's the last thing you see before you die.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, right? I think this is the right way to theme it here. Green needs to swing in with big butts to kill you with trample. Red's trying to do straight damage to your face. And this is a card that is on the same power level, I would argue, as Crater Hoof Behemoth.
It's probably not quite as good, which I think is good. Crater Hoof's probably a little above the threshold that we would want normal cards to hit.
Yeah.
But this is just very useful to red and very good.
Well, if I like to think about, like, you play this as an enchantment, it's going to be there for a while unless someone gets rid of it immediately. With Crater Hoof, if you only have, like, two creatures out, there is a chance you can't kill everyone.
That's true.
With Fire Emancipation, at least when you get damaging, it's going to have some effect. I guess Crater Hoof, too, right? I guess at its worst, it's still doing... having a big effect on the board. So is the same goes here for Fire Emancipation.
I mean, this is like double vision, though, right? Like, if they cast it in past turn, you better kill the Fire Emancipation or kill them, because you will die.
You will die, indeed. Jimmy likes this card. There's no doubt about it. I play Furnace.
I like this card. This is a sweet card. Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next one.
Oh, another sweet card.
It's Terror of the Peaks. It's 3 red for a 5/4 dragon flying, of course, but not legendary. It says, spells your opponents cast that target Terror of the Peaks cost an additional 3 life to cast. And then whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Terror of the Peaks deals damage equal to that creature's power to any target. So if you play a 4/4 with this out, Terror of the Peaks hits something for 4. Any target.
This is Warstorm Surge on a creature, costs 1 less mana, and is a 5/4 flying dragon with really sweet art.
And that's actually, you know, a little hard to remove. At least they're going to have to take some damage to do it.
Yeah, that's right. It costs an additional 3 life to cast, so it doesn't work with Fire Emancipation. No. But I think this card is just great. Again,
I mean, the other side works with Fire Emancipation, though. We'll deal triple damage.
When you deal triple damage, yeah. I mean, look, whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you play this in your Purphoros deck for sure. Now you're making 20 low tokens. They're doing 2 damage each, and the tokens are doing damage through Terror of the Peaks as well. It's like this thing's sitting there just spitting out fireballs.
Oh, yeah, that's what it's doing, right? It's like... I don't know what that has to do with creatures coming in. They're like, fire!
Or it's just so stoked that friends are here. It's like, yes! 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 And it's any target, so that's pretty sweet. In general, just being able to do it, if it was only the creatures or planeswalkers, it'd be a little worse.
It'd still be good.
But this is a 5-mana dragon. That
I think that makes it like close to Purphoros power, though, because Purphoros can't target creatures and stuff.
Oh, right. Just opponents.
Yeah, but sometimes you're like, okay, I really need to kill that Thrasios, and then I'll go after this player.
Yeah, Purphoros is each opponent. Terror of the Peaks is just one target. So that's good.
Yeah,
good.
Pretty powerful.
I think, like, if you have a dragon deck, you just play this. Lathless is a perfect include because you get a 5/5 with Terror of the Peaks when it comes in, so it just does that damage immediately. Uvara Hellkite is just pooping out dragons left and right. You're just doing tons of damage.
The Ur Dragon.
Oh, this goes infinite with Seki Season's Guide, which is a green card. It's 5 green for a legendary creature, Spirit 00. Enters the battlefield with 8+1/+1 counters on it. If damage will be dealt to Seki, prevent that damage, remove that many 1/1 counters, and create that many 1/1 colorless spirit creature tokens. And then you can sack 8 spirits to return Seki from your graveyard to the battlefield. So
you play Seki, you deal
8 damage
to it.
You get 8 1/1s.
You sack the 8 1/1s to bring Seki back out, which does 8 damage to Seki, which... you need something else to
You need a Purphoros, you need Impact Tremors, you need some things that basically just go hard with this card.
But that's infinite amount of creatures
entering the battlefield, going to their graveyard, there's lots of different things that go infinite there. Living Death, one of my favorite board wipes, because you exile all creature cards from their graveyard, and then you sack all creatures you control, then you put all cards you exile this way onto the battlefield, so you just order it that Terror of the Peaks is there, and everyone slaps it on the way in, like it's a freaking football game, and they're getting tagged in.
If you do the Living Death thing,
like special teams. And there's so many cards you can put into Obosh now, Josh.
Yeah, because it's an odd CMC, so with Obosh it deals double the damage when you play a creature, which is pretty insane. And actually it'll deal even more than this was another Azuri's Predation
target. Oh gosh,
because with Terror of the Peaks out, Azuri's Predation, you make 7, 8, 9 4/4s, boom, that's 36 damage that Terror of the Peaks gets to throw around, and those triggers will go off before the fight thing, right
for each creature your opponent's control, create a 4/4 green beast creature token, and then each of those beasts fights a different one of those creatures. I believe the creatures entering the battlefield and the fight trigger triggers come at the same time? I'm not sure. Or
I think
the
fight might
target?
Have to resolve first, actually, well, because you have to resolve the entirety of the spell. I'm not sure. We're not judges. But either way, you still get all that extra damage to throw somewhere.
You know what you do? You just kill them before they fight any of their creatures. And, and you get all the 4/4s. Hey, cool. Yeah. This you can also get into those Gravecrawler loops.
Yep.
Right, where a Gravecrawler can't block. It's a 1-mana, 2/1, and you can cast it from a graveyard as long as you control a zombie. So you cast it, sack it to Phyrexian Altar, cast it, tear
it. Each time it's dealing the damage, the 2 damage to your opponents. Yep.
Kills everything.
Works with Purphoros too.
And then we have our favorite Hornet Nest and Sporeweb Weaver that we talked about last time. So just give those indestructible and you make a lot of little 1/1s.
Yeah, because that's an infinite amount of tokens with either one and infinite life with the Sporeweb Weaver too. Because if they have indestructible,
right.
Here you get Basri Ket out, plus 1 it, boom, give them indestructible. Terror of the Peaks, you know, you make a spider that deal the 1 damage back to the thing. It makes another spider, deal the 1 damage, make another spider, gain the, you know, infinite life.
Give it haste, swing out with a bunch of spiders.
Yeah, the Hornet Nest Sporeweb spider combos are just everywhere. They're really good too.
That was the first thing I thought of.
It's funny how you're doing these set reviews and like you come up with a combo or an idea and then you keep seeing it.
Yeah,
because it's the forefront of your mind, not because it's actually good. But it's like, oh yeah, that would work again here. Oh, it would work with this card.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
In this case, because every single card that's red here is pretty much pointing towards the same direction, which is just do lots of damage. All these combos are just very obvious.
So I think Jimmy likes that card.
Yeah, I definitely do. It's a dragon too, putting it straight into the old Drago deck.
All right, here's the next card. It's called Traitorous Greed. 3 and a red for a sorcery. You gain control of target creature until end of turn. Untap that creature. It gains haste until end of turn. Add 2 mana of any one color to your mana pool. So if you have to have 4 mana to cast it, but it rebates you for 2. So this is a 2 mana threaten effect.
Yeah.
A 2 mana treachery.
2 mana act of treason.
So, I mean, 2 mana is pretty good. At what point is it efficient enough that you would play this without other synergies in deck? I think this effect is underrated. I've won games with this type of effect.
Sometimes it's just one creature, too, that's holding you back. If you switch control of an Elesh Norn, guess what? You get the plus and they lose it.
And a lot of times that'll flip the whole game and you kill somebody right then where you wouldn't have. A lot of times, too, like you could attack, but you just need a little bit more damage. You take out their biggest blocker and swing at them with it.
And
that's a lot. You know, that's a 15-point life swing. It would have to be 16-point life swing or whatever. And so I think, you know, 2 mana is getting close. Like, if it was 1 red mana threaten, I think you'd always play it.
Yeah.
So is 2 mana threaten close?
I think so, because one, you can change, let's say you're a deck that wants to be able to sometimes cast a little harder, cast things, maybe that 2 mana is relevant, right? Now it's a 2 mana effect and you have 4 other lands that are untapped, so you get that. You can tap now for 6 basically for something to cast something else.
It also any color of mana, so it can fix you there too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think red, you know, in general you're playing more sack outlets in red type decks. So you steal the card and sack it. That's like kind of the ultimate combo move with threaten effects. It is sorcery speed, so you have to look at cards. Like, you wrote down Ray of Command, which is a blue version of this. It's 3 in a blue for an instant to do that same thing.
That's the closest playable threaten effect that I have played sometimes.
Right.
And it's because it's an instant. And I was curious, like, yeah, the comparison of these two cards. Because instant makes it a lot better, right? Because you can steal somebody else's card, block with it, and 2-for-1 your opponents.
Jeez.
So I was curious, like, is it better than Ray of Command? Because Ray of Command is real fringe playable. It's good when it's good, but sometimes it does nothing.
I think I can see this being played, but I do think you want to be the kind of deck that can do something with the creature other than just, like, hope it gets their last blocker out of the way. So you want to sack it, you want to fling it, you want to do something to it.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you have, how many sack outlets? 4 or 5 in your deck? This probably becomes pretty good.
Yeah, if you're on a mono red deck again, right, you got Goblin Bombardment, you have the Altars, that's 3 right there. And then you could play Altar of Phyrexia or Phyrexian Altar. You know,
and you would play a 2-mana spell that says destroy target creature. That's
in
pretty
red.
Good.
Yeah.
And the fact that it also says hit them with it first, you know, or something like that is also good. And also, when you're sacking things, you're usually getting something for sacking it too. So it's actually giving you mana, you know, something. Yeah. So I actually like this card quite a bit.
And it gains haste to untap. So you can also use activated abilities there too. So I think there's a lot more flexibility with this card. Typically, these are the kind of cards that you kind of glance over. But the fact that it says 2 mana on it, pretty much interesting. All right. Next up, Transmogrify is 3 in red for a sorcery. Exile target creature. That creature's controller reveals cards from the top of their library until they reveal a creature card. That player puts that card onto the battlefield and shuffles the rest into their library. So this is three in a red, single target removal at sorcery speed for red. And then it gives you or an opponent the next creature in their deck. You can transmogrify your own thing to know what's coming up, or you can transmogrify theirs and hope you don't hit anything crazy.
Yeah, so it's very similar to Chaos Warp, but it hits only creatures. It's a sorcery, but does exile the thing that you hit. So there's no chance to flip over the thing that you hit, which Chaos Warp can do.
and you're guaranteed to get a creature with this, whereas Chaos Warp can sometimes flip an instant or sorcery. And
just this just goes until it finds the next creature. Yeah, so which makes it more useful on your own stuff.
Yeah, you know, I wish it were an instant. I think this is right in that like 5 to 6 power level, and it's going to be easily accessible for people that don't, you know, maybe they just want another effect in red that does something similar, or you're the kind of deck that, you know, you're a red green beaters deck and you want to get the next huge thing out of your deck.
But you have to lose 2 cards to do it because you're losing the thing that you
and
target. Yeah, I mean, maybe if you had tokens and stuff, it could be pretty good. The fact that this is a sorcery basically takes it off the table as something I'd be willing to play ever, because the whole advantage you get, or the only way you want to play removals is if it's an instant, so that you can respond when something's attacking you or doing something to you, because sometimes they're not, you don't know who they're going to attack, and then you don't want to use it. And the fact that you have to preemptively at sorcery speed use this, I just don't like it.
Yeah, and you could potentially flip over like an Ulamog or an Eldrazi, so there are some downsides
here. You could make your life worse rather than better.
Yeah, so Jimmy Wong does not like this card as much.
Yeah, it's clearly. Okay, the next one is interesting. It's Volcanic Salvo. 10 red, so 12 mana. Sorcery. This spell costs X less to cast, where X is the total power of creatures you control.
Ah.
Oh, all added together, too. So if you have 5 2/2s, this will cost just red. And it says Volcanic Salvo deals 6 damage to each of up to 2 target creatures and or planeswalkers.
Ugh. For something that's 12 mana and a sorcery, the first thing that comes to mind is, why can't this hit players?
True, could it at least finish them off? It's just too good and like limited and stuff then, probably.
Yeah.
But it's a rare, so they could do that. Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, maybe even too good for standard. Who knows?
I'd say a good, like, you know, modest case scenario is you have 5 power worth of creatures out, which is 7 mana to deal, 6 divided twice. I don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, Blasphemous Act, again, counts the power of creatures across the entire battlefield. This is only on your side. 12 mana, probably not great.
Yeah.
I'd rather play the one that you sack 2 lands and you can deal 4 damage instead of paying the mana cost. I forget the name of it. It's fire something. It's all fiery in the end. All right. The last red card we're going to talk about here is Unleash Fury.
Surprisingly good, I think.
1 in a red, instant, double the power of target creature until end of turn.
So similar to like Teemer Battle Rage or something like that.
But that's just double strike, right?
Double strike, which doubles the power, basically, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this can have other usage. Doubling the power is better if you're going to Chandra's Ignition or some other things, so I do think that's good. But the fact that it's an instant and can just kill people out of nowhere is pretty strong.
This is the kind of card that you want to stack on your Greven, I would say, because Greven gets plus X plus O. He's Menace, by the way, just so you know. Where X is the amount of life you've lost this turn, and whenever Greven attacks, you may sack another creature if you draw cards equal to that creature's power, and you lose life equal to that creature's toughness.
So
this is nice. It's not like a giant growth, right?
Yeah,
it's just the power here.
You played against my Greven deck a lot, and it's very often swinging for 11 plus, which means that now 2 mana just kill somebody.
Yeah, and if you don't want to do that, you just double the power of like your weird 6/1 creature, and you're drawing 12 cards and losing 1 life.
Oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah, that's interesting. That's great. And it doesn't double the toughness, so it'll...
Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
All right.
So that's good in 2 scenarios with Greven. I like that.
Yeah.
You know, Xenagos, Xenagod, those type of decks, double it, then Xenagos will double it again, so this is a quadruple up.
Lay down the smackdown.
Yeah. The fact that it's an instant, you will kill some people out of nowhere. Teemer Battle Rage sees actually quite a bit of play in those style decks, and some decks want 2 of those, and I would say this is a good second one. Teemer Battle Rage does sometimes give trample, which I think makes it a little bit better, but this, like we said, has some other usages with some other cards, like Greven. Teemer Battle Rage won't double the power of the thing you're sacking and draw you more cards, so yeah, that might even out and make them about the same.
Maybe Feather likes this deck as well.
Oh, yeah.
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 Okay, let's take a look at red here. I wrote A originally, just like, this is an A. There's more than three cards we can talk about, and you want to play a few of them. I'm going to actually take that down a little bit, just because the last
blue was an A, and it's not quite as good as blue.
Yeah, it's not quite as good as blue, but I do like that they are, it seems like we're buying into this the direction here that you kind of called out, actually. We want to do more damage in red. And
let's scale it properly, right, for multiplayer, and it feels like that's what the plan they're on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do like the direction they've been going with red for the last few years. I think they noticed that red was weak a few years ago and have worked really hard to sort of correct that, and it's working.
Yeah, impulsive draws, their response to card draw, it's more than we've seen for white, and instead of big creatures or big whatevers, it's value goblins and damage doublers and damage triplers and stuff.
Yeah, so I like that direction. There's no Teferi level card. There's no Sublime Epiphany level card. Fire Emancipation is probably the closest to that, and it is very good.
There's only one instant out of these 10 cards, right?
Yeah, that's a little bit scary. What do you give it then? You downgrade it to what?
I think a B+.
Yeah, I'm going to say B+, A-. It's good. I'm happy with where red's at here.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and they got a lot of cards, so that's good too.
All right, we got a lot more cards to talk about today. We just went through half of the remaining ones in red alone. There's black, there's multicolor, there's artifact, and there's a single land that we'll be talking about. But before we get there, let's hear a quick message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
All right, we're back. It's the M21 set review. We're on the home stretch here. We've got just 10 more cards to go. We're going to go finish off the colors first. We're going to be talking about the black cards, and there's only a few of them to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start off with Hooded Blightfang. 2 and a black for a 1/4 snake with Death Touch.
Yes.
Whenever a creature you control with Death Touch attacks, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. Whenever a creature you control with Death Touch deals damage to a Planeswalker, destroy that Planeswalker. So Death Touch for Planeswalkers. Death Touch Tribal, we've seen more of this sort of keyword Tribal over the last couple of years. We have some
keywords are just important these days.
Yeah, we have some Menace Tribal. We're getting some Death Touch Tribal. We've had some of this. This definitely encourages you to play more Death Touchy creatures.
Yep. We've seen this effect as well, the second one, when a creature you control deals damage to a Planeswalker, destroy that Planeswalker, with Vraska Swarm's Eminence, because she makes these little 1/1 black assassin creatures with Death Touch, and that's also in the Death Touch Tribal world. I think Pestilent Spirit might have been the first time that that we were sort of being signaled that Death Touch Tribal might be a thing. It's this interesting 2 and a black 3/2 with Menace and Death Touch. Instants and sorcery spells you control have Death Touch, so any amount of damage they deal to a creature is enough to destroy it. So I could see an interesting like black red death touch tribal. Don't let any of the none of your things live type deck.
Don't you have to be in green though, so you can play the Vraska and stuff too? So, yeah. So maybe it's more.
So
like,
maybe it's yeah.
It's Sultai. No, what is that?
Black red green. It's
Jund.
Jund. I said junk.
It's Jund.
It's Jund. Okrun Assassin is a one with death touch. All creatures able to block Okrun Assassin do so. And Oran Frostfang, you're right. You do have to play green for this. It's a snow creature, three green, attacking creatures you control at death touch. And similar to what Bow of Nylea does as well, which is give your attacking creatures death touch.
Yeah, I think giving, you know, you're going to be in a death touch deck. You're going to want enough death touch in the deck to even consider playing this. And I don't know if we're quite at a critical mass of death touch matters payoffs
yet, yeah,
for that deck to really exist. But if you wanted to try it, I think good cards in that deck would be ones that turn your death touchers into pingers. We talk about this a lot. So Viridian Longbow and Thornbite Staff, even better with Hooded Blightfang, because when a creature you control death touch deals damage to a planeswalker, it doesn't say combat damage.
Oh.
So you could ping the planeswalkers and kill them.
Wow. Too.
So that would be pretty good if you can turn them into Tims, basically.
Do you think they did that on purpose? Because
I hope so.
Right, the first one is about attacking, and the second one just says deals damage.
Yeah.
All they had to put was the word combat in there, and it'd be way worse, but I love that. That's great.
So Hornet Queen, too, just because you want a lot of Death Touchers, and that creates a bunch of them. Hornet Nest, we keep mentioning. Maybe Hornet Nest stock is going to go up here.
You know, bees are pretty helpful.
Yeah.
Maybe not Hornets, but...
So this is a way to make more Death Touchers, because you just want, like, 5-6 Death Touchers out to get a lot of that trigger on the drain ability. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so this card I think is right in the middle. It's fine, but it definitely is opening a door, and we'll see how far that door gets kicked open in the next.
It seems like
year.
The door is just a little open now.
Yeah,
and it's see in.
It's opening one at a time. Yeah. All right, Peer into the Abyss. Talking about seeing into something. Maybe the newest creepiest art ever. What do you think?
It's pretty creepy.
It's pretty creepy.
If we ever do a Halloween episode like that again, this is on the list, right?
Yeah, seriously. This is how I feel like when I wake up after a day in quarantine, just eating so much. The last day. I'm just like,
why did I do that to myself? Yeah.
All right, this is 4BBB for a sorcery. Target player draws cards equal to half the number of cards in their library and loses half their life, and you're gonna round up each time to do so. So 7 mana, pretty much draw all the cards yourself or make someone else do it and lose a bunch of life.
Probably draw like around 40 cards.
Yeah,
and then lose half your life.
Yeah, you're gonna want to ramp this out if you're doing it. If you're doing it to other people, well, hey, your Necrosar deck loves this, right?
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, because it just kills somebody, right? Like almost every time, it's like play this, kill you. Even if you have 60 cards left, you'll draw 30, take 30 from Necrosar, and then you'll draw 30, take half your life, and then. Take 30 from Necrosar for drawing the 30, right?
Yeah, there's no way you live past that, right?
I don't think so. And then Psychosis Crawler is the inverse, where it's for every one you draw, your opponents take that many. So you would point it at yourself.
There you go.
Draw 40, hopefully, and then kill everybody. Or 30, maybe it's later in the game, so everybody's taking some damage.
Yeah, if you have Villas Broker of Blood, I think you almost deck yourself doing this, because whenever you lose life, and you're life here...
you draw a card.
Yeah, so you're going to lose half that life, and you're going to draw that much life.
I think you do die, right?
Like, unless you're rounding up. So if you had like 10 cards... You have 11 cards in your library, you're going to go down the... Wait, you draw 6, right? Because you're rounding up?
6, yeah.
Oh, you died. You just died.
It depends on what your life toll's at. If it's at 4 when you do that, then yeah. I think you live.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because you only lose two. And then,
yeah. Interesting. Narset, Parter of Veils. Each opponent can't draw more than one card each turn. So this just says lose half your life.
Loses half their life or draws one card.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not... I don't think I would play it just for that.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. This card is a card that Alex Kessler introduced me to, and it was very unfortunate.
Oh, this is a CEDH card, too.
Like, Notion Thief.
Yeah.
2BBB, 3-1 flash. If an opponent would draw a card, except the first one they draw on each of their draw steps. Instead, that player skips that draw, and you draw a card. So
you point this at them, they lose half their life, and then you draw the cards.
Yeah, they don't draw any of the cards, because it's outside of their first draw step.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That is pretty good. Good job, Notion Thief.
I like Horizon Chimera, because whenever you draw a card, you gain a life.
Oh, hey.
So you're going to be up life probably after this is all over.
Yeah,
so I like that.
7 mana, right? Oh, Niv-Mizzet Perun, another one. Whenever you draw a card, it deals 1 damage to any target.
Yep. Firemind, same thing.
Right.
So you'd point it at yourself, draw the card, maybe finish off player.
Kill someone else.
These last two, I think, are probably the best ones. It's Psychic Corrosion and Sphinx's Tutelage.
Ah.
So whenever you draw a card for Psychic Corrosion, each opponent puts the top two cards of their library into their graveyard.
Oh, so half your deck times two
is probably going to mill them out,
right? And then Sphinx's tutelage is whenever you draw a card, target opponent puts the top two cards of their library into their graveyard. However, if they're both non-lands that share a color, you repeat the process.
So you're going to draw 40 cards. They're going to do that 40 times.
There's a print. And
you can point out another person after that person's...
Right.
So
resolving this is going to be a pain in the butt.
Psychic Corrosion is a lot easier to resolve. That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay, so Peer into the Abyss. It's 7 mana. Obviously, this is not a do-nothing card, but it is...
7 mana.
7 mana, yeah. So, you know, you have to look and be like, all right, is it better to cast Omniscience types effects in my deck, or am I looking to play Peer into the Abyss and have to combo it with something else? Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a little bit... It looks really flashy and awesome, but it's not actually that great, I think.
Yeah, but there will be decks, I think, where it's going to be okay.
Yeah, and it's just an instant win in a lot of decks too, so,
or at least an instant kill one player.
Yeah. And again, if you're at 7 mana and you're comboing off with another card, that's, I'd say, a pretty standard,
that's like totally area. Fine. That's around the time. If you could do 7 mana plus something else, then games probably should be ending anyway, right?
Yeah.
All right, the next card is the last black card we're going to talk about. It's Liliana's Standard Bearer, 2 and a black for a 3/1 zombie knight with flash. When it enters the battlefield, draw X cards, where X is the number of creatures that died under your control this turn.
Kind of cool. I like this. I thought zombies were like slow, so flash doesn't make a ton of sense.
That's a really good point.
And he's just like, like, it has flash. We're like, doesn't look like it.
It's one of those zombies from 28 Days Later. It's not the other zombies.
Oh, yeah. Or the new, was it the World War Z zombies?
Yeah,
or
it's not the Walking Dead zombies.
The sprinters, yeah. So I thought about my Marchesa deck, obviously, because you can sack this card and then it could come back into the battlefield if you're sacking like three creatures with +1/+1 counters.
Yep.
Then you're going to draw X number of cards where all those cards, creatures that died in control this turn. So there's a little bit of play there.
Anytime you're sacking your own creatures, aristocrats in general, this is probably going to be playable, because a lot of times it's like, sack these four things, get some amount of value, flash this in, draw four cards.
Yeah. The Gravecrawler loop we talked about before, again, now you can draw, right? Four mana, pretty much. You play the Gravecrawler, sack it to Phyrexian Altar over and over again, and then you can flash in Liliana's Standard Bearer, and you could draw like 90 cards.
Yeah, as many as you feel like.
Living Death, once again, this is a card that, again, it says sacrifices all creatures they control, and then you put the cards you exiled this way into the battlefield from your graveyard. So
if Liliana's Standard Bearer was in the graveyard and played Living Death, you might
draw a bunch there.
That's pretty sweet.
Garna the Blood Flame is a deck. I kind of want to build this. It's a flash card. When it enters the battlefield, return to your hand all creature cards in your graveyard that are put there from anywhere this turn. So it's kind of like the eggs thing where you want to sack everything.
Right. That deck is built for a lot of things to die all at once, which means Liliana's Standard Bearer would probably be good in that deck. Yeah. Shirei, Shizo's Caretaker, which brings back creatures with power 1 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. So that is sacking a lot of creatures, so Liliana's Standard Bearer will be good.
Yeah, and then there's like Awakening Zone and From Beyond, or any of these cards that make Eldrazi spawn or Scions, because these are little creatures that almost act like treasure tokens. You sack them to add, but in this case, just a colorless mana.
I mean, imagine just like Modest scenario, you sack three of those things, and then you flash this in, and you basically turn those Scions into cards, which is, you know, pretty good. Like, a lot of times you're like, oh, I have three of these Scions. Do you want each of those to be a card from your deck? Yes, I do. That would be sweet. Thank you.
People play Painful Truths, which is 2 and a black that at most can draw you 3 cards. Liliana's Standard Bearer has a much higher rate and can be flashed in as well, so that's pretty good.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
That was black.
Do we give it less points because it only really had 3 standouts?
With red, we didn't even consider Chandra, but I guess she wasn't that great. And
Your
Sanctum.
Point.
And then red had the two commanders that I don't want to like pretend didn't exist.
Oh, Subira, right?
But, yeah, and Garda or whatever.
The dragon.
The mixed treasure tokens. I still think it's a B+.
Yeah, it'd be plus around that.
Okay.
Because those commanders don't add anything new.
They're cool, but they're not like awesome. Yeah. Okay, so black has Vito. Yep. Black has Karavek. The Sanctum that deals... drains
and the Liliana
and Liliana which was okay. So not adding a ton there.
I think
not very many cards here.
Black score is pretty low here. I think C minus even,
which is okay. Black, from our stats a couple years ago, was the strongest color in Commander. I think since then green has probably pulled ahead, but it's black's in the top three colors, and I don't think needs a ton of help.
Right. Black can do everything pretty much. It can draw cards. It can ramp. It can find ways of doing most things.
There's nothing we're sitting around going, you know, I wish black could do X. Like, black is fine. So the fact that it didn't get a lot of tools isn't the worst thing.
Yeah.
It's, if you play a lot of black, it's probably a little disappointing. But
it's kind of like you give the grade for the color, and then you give the grade for how you feel about it getting that grade.
Right. It got a C minus, but I think C minus is actually not that bad in this case.
Yeah.
When white gets a C minus, it's way worse than when black does. Yeah. How about that? All right, let's go to the
it's
multicolor.
Like systemic, actually, if you think about it. Okay, all right.
Okay, multicolored cards. There's only three of them. The first one is Conclave Mentor. Green and a white, 2 mana for a 2/2 centaur cleric. If one or more 1/1 counters would be put on a creature you control, put that many plus one 1/1 counters on that creature instead. So hardened scales, basically.
Yeah, on the creature.
And it says when Conclave Mentor dies, you gain life equal to its power. So if you've made it bigger, it will then give you more life when it dies. I mean, if a deck has hardened scales and is in green and white, then it probably wants this card too, right?
You definitely do. And this is a conversation feels like we've had quite a bit of times. The plus one matters decks, they're all over the place. It's great when you have Gave Groove Spores. And the meme now is like, oh, yay, finally, a way for my Gave deck to go infinite.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need another.
You don't need another. But it's another thing that adds on to this. The Rayhan Last of the Obzon deck is actually, I think, growing a lot in popularity as well, especially with the new Commander Dies rules.
Well, she got a little worse, unfortunately, with the Commander's Dies.
So, fortunately, I guess Conclave Mentor maybe buffs it up a little bit if you're playing a partner in here to get white in there.
Yep. Tyam, the new one that cares about counters on creatures.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously going to play nice with this.
Merith, Will of the Wild, again, wanting plus one counter matters cards. The Ozolith.
Oh, yeah.
Yay.
Keep your counters around and transform them to creatures and stuff. Yeah. We don't have to talk about plus one counters much, right? Yeah. You know if you want a card like this.
And it's an uncommon, which means it's going to be easily accessible. And I think that's great for just enabling. I think it's a pretty fun strategy. And it's one that I appealed to me a lot when I first started playing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next up we have Experimental Overload. 2, a blue and a red for another uncommon. It's a sorcery. Create an XX blue and red weird creature token, where X is the number of instant and sorcery cards in your graveyard. Then you may return an instant or a sorcery card from your graveyard to your hand. Exile Experimental Overload. So 4 mana, rebuy a spell pretty much. Sometimes get a big blue and red weird creature.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting like a 3/3 or 4/4 most of the time, probably.
Yeah.
It harkens a little to Volcanic Visions, which I think is an underrated card and I like a lot, but this has less effect. Like, most of what you're doing is just getting the card back in your hand, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I like less than Volcanic Visions, which is like, hey, wipe the board and get the card back in your hand, which will give you the time to cast the card that you just played. I guess a decent-sized creature might give you some time, too, but
yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah, we're stretching a little bit here for the multicolored.
Because there's not very many.
There's not very many, yeah. And like, oh, guess what? Real the Otherwise. Instance and Sorcerers in Graveyard, Morty, great. We done it.
All right, the last multicolored card is Leafkin Avenger. 2 a red and a green. 4 mana for an elemental druid. It's a 4/3. Has 2 abilities. You can tap it and add green for each creature you control with power 4 or greater.
Oh.
That's a new line of text.
Yeah.
And then you can pay 7 and a red, and Leafkin Avenger deals damage equal to its power to target player or planeswalker.
Okay. So infinite mana. This is one of those cards like the Invokers from the Eldrazi plane with the little Hedrons.
Zendikar.
Mm-hmm. Do a similar thing here. But this kind of reads like a guy's cradle for all those 4+ power matters decks, right? Just a little bit.
I mean, here's the thing. If you have, let's say you have 4+ power creatures on the battlefield.
Okay.
You're winning. You don't need a bunch more mana.
Yeah.
Like, you already have a bunch of mana on the table. You've clearly already created a lot of mana somehow, because how'd you cast all that stuff?
Yeah, 4 mana for a mana dork is pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
But again, you know, if you're playing your Omnath, Locus of Rage, or Royal decks, you're making a bunch of elementals and things in any way. So, you know.
If you can create a lot of mana, this will just win the game by just funneling the mana into it. And so maybe there's some weird Staff of Domination loops you could get into by tapping itself to create the mana that you eventually activate
but you
with
have
it.
To make it red.
You gotta make red. Yeah.
It's an uncommon.
Yeah. Okay.
Stop talking about it. Oh, gosh.
All right. Artifacts and colorless cards. There's only three of them, and one of them we've talked about a lot already. So it's Chromatic Orrery. This was our preview card. 7 mana for a legendary artifact. You may spend mana as though it were mana of any color. You can tap it to add 5 colorless mana or 5 diamond mana to your mana pool, or you can pay 5 and tap it to draw a card for each color among permanents you control. Jimmy and I are both pretty mediocre, lackluster on this card. It's a lot of mana.
Mm-hmm. One thing that people know that we did not mention is that, yes, this works well in a Joda deck.
No, we
Joda.
Mentioned that. I don't know why people said we didn't.
I know. I thought we did, too, and I read the comments. I was like, are we sure? And I didn't check, but okay, I guess we did mention it. Anyway, if you want to hear a much more detailed breakdown about Chromatic Orrery, including us not really knowing what an Orrery is, we now know it's like a recreation of the
universe. A model of like a solar system.
Yeah, yeah. Which is on every Orrery. Just check out that episode. Well, obviously, you can just look up Chromatic Orrery. It should be one of the first things that come up. But we're not super high on this card. 7 mana. I mean, let's just talk about the blue cards that are under 7 mana that do more.
Yeah, Sublime Epiphany is way better than this card. At 7 mana, you need to be making game-winning plays. This is setting you up for further plays, which I think you're done with once you're...
We already don't like Chromatic... a Gilded Lotus, right? Yeah. That's a 5 mana mana rock that you could say is, scaled around the same power level as Chromatic for 7.
Yeah.
All right, next up we have Maze Mind Tome. 2 for an artifact. You can tap it to put a page counter on Maze Mind Tome and scry 1. Or you can pay 2 and tap it to put a page counter on Maze Mind Tome to draw a card. However, when there are 4 or more page counters on Maze Mind Tome, exile it. If you do, gain 4 life. Aw, man. It was looking so sweet.
Oh, man.
Right to that last bit. Where you can only do this 4 times. You can scry for free, right? To 2 mana, scry 1 immediately when it comes down. I can see a mono white or mono red deck maybe playing this card if you can bring it back with mono red artifacts.
I mean, Endless Atlas already exists and doesn't...
Well, you exile it.
You can't bring it back. Endless Atlas already exists, so if it's mono red, mono white, or Boros, you're running that first. And Endless Atlas, honestly, like, I've not been super happy with it. You run it out of necessity, but paying 2 mana for an artifact that you then have to pay 2 mana and tap to draw a card for is a really bad rate. That's 4 mana for 1 card, 6 mana for 2, 8 mana for 3, 10 mana for 4. This is not what you really want to be doing, because what do mono white and mono red decks also have as a disadvantage for their colors?
Mana.
They create less mana than the other colors. So you can't afford to be wasting it inefficiently like this. So I don't like this whole I don't like this whole attitude of, well, that's what white and red have, so you have to do it. But it's like it's even worse for them to waste more mana to draw cards than everybody else. And you're right. Even in a good scenario where you've got the mana and this is going, you can only do it 4 times.
And then it goes away.
And then it goes away.
It exiles itself too. It doesn't even want you to pull off other shenanigans with it.
I just think it's a worse version of stuff that's already out there, and that other stuff is not even that great.
Good, yeah. The colors are disadvantaged. You need to be able to jump another extra hurdle, but because it's an artifact, that means that every color can now play it, so you can't jump too hard of a hurdle. So it's in this weird place where it's just like, well, sorry, you're not the favorite child of the family.
Two places I think you may think about it are Aminatu,
because you can flicker it,
and Brago. And you're basically saying, I'm just going to tap this to scry the 1. Aminatu does occasionally care about the top card of the library.
Sometimes he'll draw.
Yeah, and sometimes you might draw, but that's not the main thing it's there for. It's mainly like a thing that costs 2 mana to tap and scry, which is probably not good enough for most Aminatu and Brago decks, but if you have like a lower powered one or a budget one, maybe this fits in. Okay. But yeah, if you can't flicker it or something, like, I don't know. I mean, it is also magical Christmas land to say I'm going to do this 5 times in a game.
Yeah.
In most games, like, you probably won't even do it 4. Like, you just won't have the mana to do
that. Imagine drawing this on, like, turn 7.
Yeah. But like, if you do, you're never going to have to worry about that last part, because the game won't go long enough.
Yeah.
All right. We're talking about
too long. Sorry, Maze Mind Tome. Sorry. Sorry. We apologize. Someone out there is like, I like this card. Okay.
All right. The last artifact is a creature. It's Spark Hunter Masticore. 3 mana for a 3/4.
Oh.
Artifact creature Masticore. Masticores always have this text, which makes them a lot worse. Is as an additional cost to cast this spell, discard a card. Could be an upside in some decks, though.
True.
It has protection from planeswalkers. That's pretty interesting.
It's a Spark Hunter. That
makes
sense.
Spark Hunter. It has 2 activated abilities. The first one is pay 1 mana, Spark Hunter deals 1 damage to target planeswalker. So for 4 mana, it'll kill Teferi.
in general, I think you're playing this in the Super Friends heavy meta, or when you play it, other people go, oh, thank goodness. That's not one of those cards where I can pay mana into it, is it? And you're like, no, only me.
Maybe you play it in like a Muldrotha deck or something like that, where mm-hmm. you don't care if the card goes to the graveyard.
Right, because you have to discard.
Yeah, and it's kind of a emergency release valve for, you know, oh no, there's a Planeswalker I got to take care of. I want a tool to deal with that.
Yeah. Is Hex Parasite better? It's a 1-mana 1/1. You can pay X and then black or a Phyrexian mana to remove up to X counters from target permanent.
Yeah.
Only costs one.
Yeah.
You pay a Phyrexian.
Yeah. This is color restricted, right? So it has to be in black.
To be black, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, fine. It's probably better, but this can, you know, become indestructible and do some stuff, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, you know. Okay.
I think this card's okay.
You told me. It's not very good.
It's okay. And Super Friends metas. Sure. I don't know. I mean, sometimes you see a card, Josh, and you're like, I'm just never playing that.
Yeah. That's what we've been saying about a lot of cards, and how I like to wrap up the conversation about a card is like, blah, 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 blah. But we're probably never going to see that really. In reality, on the battlefield during Commander games, Spark Hunter Master Core, we probably won't ever see it, or maybe it'll be just very rare if we do.
Yeah, and you know, in those cases, I do enjoy seeing these cards because it's like, oh, cool, I like what you figured out how to make it work. Because you have to jump through hurdles for certain cards like this to get to their maximum like fun time value.
It's one of those ones where you go, oh, I remember that from draft.
Yeah. Straight to the draft chat file. All right, the last one is a land, arguably better art than 9 lives, but they're both up there. It's called Animal Sanctuary. You can tap it to add colorless, or you can pay 2 to tap it and put a +1/+1 counter on target bird, cat, dog, goat, ox, or snake.
Or, why isn't it all of them?
I don't know, right?
I guess that would probably be too powerful, but they have like Ornreath the Vastwood and stuff, but that's this creature's that entered the battlefield this turn. Okay, fine.
So 2 mana to put a +1/+1 counter on your bird tribal deck, cat tribal deck, dog, goat, ox, or snake tribal deck. I think cat and dog tribal decks now might exist. Goat tribal decks are always a joke, and they do exist. And snake tribal does exist as well.
Sure, Hapatra.
So that's like 3 or 4, and bird tribal, sure, that exists too.
So really, goat and ox are the ones that don't, is what you're saying?
Yeah, but, you know, I think there are better ways to put +1/+1 counters, for instance, on all your cards, all your creatures.
I'm trying to think if I would put this in my Hapatra deck. I'm not sure. Because one counter on one snake is who cares? It's definitely not worth this being a land that I draw in my opening turn that makes it so I can't cast Hapatra on turn 2 because it's colorless. Yeah.
It's at the cost of also a land that you're tapping that turn. 2 other lands, too. So that's 3 mana.
3 mana, put a 1/1 counter on something. Like, are you ever really doing that? And if you are, you're losing that game anyway, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're ever at a point where that's what you have to be doing, that's a play that you're making in a real game of Commander, 3 mana, put a 1/1 counter on something, you're either losing that game by a million or you're winning that game by a million.
And you just have the liberty to run around and be like, and sure, I'll Animal Sanctuary.
Yeah, why not?
It doesn't come in tapped like a lot of these sort of specialty lands do. If you have a Mutavault, it's a changeling. So I was like, oh, maybe if a Marchesa deck, because again, +1/+1 counters are not what Grixis does best. So if you had some weird Marchesa deck where they're all changelings and then you can use Animal Sanctuary to put a +1/+1 counter on it, you know?
Now, this is
find
a peek into the mind of Jimmy.
Find some hurdles.
Through the lens of my Marchesa deck, is this even good?
Yeah, it happens a few times every episode where it's like, Jimmy, where are you going? It's like, gotta go look through the lens of my Marchesa deck.
Okay, I'm pulling out all the cards that we talked about last episode too, because we're going to go into our favorite questions here, which are our favorite cards and what we feel are our favorite card,
right,
and what we feel is the most powerful new card in the set. And I'm just pulling out some
the big
nomination
ones.
Yeah, nominees.
And the nominees are,
I think we can narrow it down even further realistically, right?
Yes, let's see.
It's probably
okay. Another thing that we usually talk about now is how do we feel about the new cards overall, and I'm gonna say I'm really pleasantly surprised by the core set, not only because there are some cards that sort of enter into the territory of fixing problems, but big reprints, especially Commander staples. It really is the year of Commander in a lot more ways than I think we expected when that first tagline was thrown around to us when we had Gavin on last year.
Mm-hmm.
Just because we see that they're paying a lot more attention to us in the reprints, and they're doing so even in standard sets, usually where they are much more wary of doing so because it will affect the standard power level. Like putting Azusa into standard, for instance, might be problematic, or it might not be. So you're hoping that they've tested it out. But for us Commander players, big thumbs up in that regard. I think this set, and in general, the improvements that were made to red, as well as to a certain degree white, make me pretty up on it as a whole. And it's a core set. You know, M15 was the first core set I really came back to, and I had many fond memories from that. And we still play some cards from that set, but not that many. I think there are going to be a lot more general staples from this one.
That was some good talking. Good job.
Yeah, good organizing.
Okay, so I pulled aside some nominees here. I'll just read them so that they can follow along.
Sure.
Sanctum of All, which is the Big Daddy 5 Wooburg Shrine card.
This is for most powerful new card, by the way.
Yep. Teferi, Master of Time. Sublime Epiphany. Fiery Emancipation, the damage tripler. Mm-hmm. Chandra's Incinerator. Elder Gargaroth, I think, is probably the best green card, or it's that, or it's Garrick Unleashed. Yeah. Peer into the Abyss. Black was pretty lacking in this set, so there wasn't a lot of choice. Angelic Ascension, which is the sort of Path to Exile, but instead of a land, you get a 4-4 flyer.
Mm-hmm.
And Idol of Endurance, or 9 lives, maybe.
Yeah, Angelic Ascension can also get rid of a Planeswalker, notably.
Right, right. So I think that's probably the best white card.
And then there's maybe an argument for Discontinuity, which is the stop the turn, end the turn, blue instant.
It's probably closer to power level of all the other cards that aren't blue, but I think the other two blue cards are better than it.
Yeah, which kinda, it's a long, long distance between the rest of the cards and the blue cards here, I think.
Yeah, I think if we were going to narrow it down even further, we would just say it's either Teferi, Master of Time, or Sublime Epiphany. Do you agree?
I agree. And I think I would probably take Sublime Epiphany over Teferi, because Teferi, look, we just talked it up a lot, right? And other people are going to be talking it up a lot. You play it on the battlefield, people are going to be talking it up a lot. It's going to paint a big target on your back. Sublime Epiphany, I think, just out of nowhere could win you the game, might edge it a little more for more powerful.
I'm going to say Teferi. I think we're going to see a lot of Teferi. I think you should get used to seeing this card in the battlefield. It's just never going to be bad. It's always going to loot you at least twice, probably three times. It'll just be hard to kill fast enough for it to not do that.
I think we definitively say, too, it's better than Jace the Mind Sculptor as a four-man planeswalker.
For Commander, I believe so, for sure, yeah. And sometimes it'll just outright win the game, go unchecked, get out early, and things like that. Sublime Epiphany, I think, is very good, but it's six mana later game play. I just think we're probably going to see more Teferi. I think Teferi is just going to be a staple.
Yeah.
Close to the level of Cyclonic Rift, but not quite. More along the lines of like Smothering Tithe.
You can Spark Double it too, right? Make another...
Think of how often we see Smothering Tithe now. I bet Teferi is like a similar level of... That's how much we'll see it.
Yeah, and the only thing that's stopping that from happening is that it's a mythic. Now, if we remove the blue cards from the equation, mm-hmm. Now it rises to the top.
Now, this is more interesting, I think, because these cards are a little bit more...
My vote is actually for Fire Emancipation, yeah. I think when I compared it to the Craterhoof Behemoth, I was like, oh yeah, this is a card that wins you the game often on the spot.
Yep. And or the turn after you play it, if you're still around. So yeah, I agree with you. I like that a lot. And I think my second choice would be Angelic Ascension, maybe.
Oh, interesting. I kind of like Idol of Endurance just because it's something that looks like they're aiming to have white do a little more, which is kind of like mess around with certain CMC permanents and different zones.
Well, let's talk about our favorite card in the set here, which is not always lined up with the most powerful cards.
Let me see if there's one that didn't make
these nominations.
You know what? Terror of the Peaks. This has got to be my favorite card.
Actually, that could have been in contention too for most powerful card. I mean, certainly. I don't think it's with the blue cards, but with Fire Emancipation.
It does go infinite with some stuff for sure. And mm-hmm. I think Conspicuous Snoop also, or even Brash Taunter. The fact that they're all red makes me very happy.
Okay.
These are cool cards.
I think Sublime Epiphany is probably my favorite as far as, I know it's powerful also, but it's just a very Josh card as far as like, just wait around and then do the thing that I feel so safe. Just like pass the turn. And if you have Vidalcan Orrery out, then you're like, oh, I didn't need to use Sublime Epiphany. I'll do something else.
Something else, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's just the kind of card that really leans into how I like to play the game, which is basically feel safe and feel like I'm going to be able to deal with whatever happens because I have a variety of answers. So
that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
A cool set overall, though. I agree with you. I'm very happy with this, especially coming from a core set, and especially if you factor in the reprints.
Yeah.
Like factor in Azusa,
Ugin,
Grim Tutor. This is pretty great. And then we haven't even gotten to Jumpstart, which we're going to do a set review for because we have to, because there's a bunch of new cards. But talk about the reprints and Jumpstart.
Yeah, there's a bunch there too.
This is a pretty good, you know, what, 3 month period as far as Magic reprints and stuff on giving things to the Commander format. So that's pretty cool.
I am glad too that I think this does lower the cost of entry in a lot of different ways for players to build a certain power level of deck and get to get some of the staples as well. And you just get the added benefit if you're out there and you're in an LGS finally and cracking some packs, you might just get some of these great staples as well.
Yeah, really, really cool. All right, to the listeners, what is your favorite new card from M21? Are there any that you think are going to make a big splash in Commander that we did not talk about? Or are there any interactions that you see that we didn't talk about? Or, you know, these are new cards. Oftentimes we get small little rule things wrong on a couple of them. Go ahead and point that stuff out in the comments and stuff. Just
I want to know what is like the common that's going to rock our minds that we didn't think about, because we talked about a couple of uncommons here,
but no commons.
I'm sure there's at least one in there that's like, hey, don't forget Pauper People Rejoice.
I think there's a common that's like one black instant sack a creature, draw two cards, which I think is probably playable and pretty good.
Cool.
All right, if you want to get any of the cards that we just talked about, or all the cards we just talked about, or any of the Jumpstart cards, or any of the Double Master stuff that's coming up, or
Commander Legends,
Mystery Boosters,
Ikoria,
C20, all this stuff, cardkingdom.com/commandzone is the place to go. You're going to buy this stuff anyway. You really want to get all these cards, jam them into your decks. If you just use our affiliate link when you purchase all that stuff, you really are simultaneously helping out Game Nights, this podcast, Extra Turns, I'm going to say it. We've been working on Extra Turns. Those are hopefully coming down the pipe pretty soon.
Exciting.
So, yeah, definitely big thanks to everybody who supports our sponsors. They do make all this stuff possible.
Yep. And hey, look, they said it was a good year for Commander players. It's also a good year for dog and cat lovers. And Ultra Pro's got your back covered, because look at Josh's playmat. Look at that.
It's so cute.
And there's a bunch of actually other dog arts that they've been making playmats for. Ultra Pro, again, highest quality playmats in the business, bar none. They've been doing it for the longest. You want to go to them. You don't want to just order something off another website of another company, because honestly, I've done it in the past. The colors aren't as crisp. They're a little washed out. They're not allowed to use some of the art. And so Ultra Pro is the one that we could just go to and trust, because it's, you know, for me, affordable, and it's a great way to protect my cards, and it's a great way to theme out what I'm playing with, and it makes me happier, because that's, you know, those small things definitely add up. You know, I'm the guy that's looking through the Marchesa lens all every time. You know, I'm the guy that's also going to want to deck out my, you know, box a little bit to look a little more on theme with what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's funny because you and DJ have definitely, and Cassius have definitely, like, rubbed off on me. And
yeah.
That, like, when I'm like, we built that Obosh deck a few weeks back, and I ordered all the cards. I'm like, okay, I have to get Rakdos sleeves. I have to get a Rakdos deck box. I got to get something that's Rakdos themed for the playmat when I play it. And I'm like, I never used to do that. But Ultra Pro is the best place to find everything together under the same banner that's going to fit any theme that you can come up with. They really are the best at that stuff.
And so, you can find it everywhere, including cardkingdom.com/commandzone, as well as just in your regular stores. And it's great to support your LGS if they stock that product.
All right, now it's time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic.
We promised it this time, too.
Yeah, because we skipped it last time.
You know, have we ever talked about music? I'll give a quick music recommendation.
Let's go for it.
Run the Jewels, which is a band that has a couple of iconic music videos. We just released a new album. It's very, if you like hip-hop and rap, it's very fun. And I think it's very present to what's happening in the world right now. So it's a very relevant album.
Run the Jewels?
Run the Jewels, yeah, it's the band name. And
I've never even heard of them.
What? No way.
No.
If I played you a couple of their songs, I'll play it after this. You'll recognize
them. Can't play it now because there'll be copyright infringement stuff.
Yeah, sorry. The DMCA
we
request
sing
is
it
already
badly,
happening.
Maybe, at the beginning of it's that kind of, okay.
The album is called RTJ4, so okay. Run the Jewels 4, I think, is their fourth
Run
album.
Run the Jewels 4.
Very Did you have cool. one, though?
Huh?
Did you have one? You look like you're about to.
I'll save it for next time. I don't want to waste end steps, man. That was a good one.
That's a good point. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Big thanks to our editing, graphics, and logistics team, which is Ashlyn Rose, Craig Blanchett, Manson Lung, Lady Danger, Jake Boss, Josh Murphy, Alfred Estaca, and Sam Waldo.
And special thanks, as always, to Jeffrey Palmer. You can find him on Twitter at LivingCardsMTG. He's doing the living backgrounds behind us here on set, and they start and end our show at youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast. So big thanks, as always, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeffrey, and thank you, everybody out there, for watching.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.